attached entity, which often the entity is like a reptilian type or another entity which has the ability to work through a certain person as a vector, okay? And as once, let's say this person gets involved with the vector who has the spirit, then from then on, they start having weird...
Hello,
I am Baby Bear.
You see the mini on my chest?
Funny, yes?
No.
Really, really bizarre. And those are things that I've yet to even write about because I didn't even know...
Is reality. The connection is you. Check out Catherine Buckaloo on Truth Connections Radio, Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on 107.7 FM, the Paranormal Radio Network.
Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway, mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night.
News on the Flip Side.
Come join us every Saturday night.
News on the Flip Side.
Come join us every Saturday night.
News on the Flip Side.
Come join us every Saturday. Every day. The truth of the new is never on the news. But you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
welcome to Citizen Sane, our first broadcast in 2014. We've been away for a little while for various reasons. I've had dodgy internet. We've both been a bit poorly. I've been dying of pregnancy and I've not been coherent very much. So tonight our guest is Michael Austin Melton of Starborn Support, or formerly known as MUFON Mike. Are we allowed to say that still? That was quite a while ago, was it?
Oh,
so
God.
We're going to talk about all things weird as usual. And a guy somewhere here in the background. You there, guy? I'll say hi for him. I think he's not very well. So me and Mike will just pick up the slack.
Yeah, poor guy.
Yeah. Hello, Mike. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me, Sasha.
No, it's been long overdue, I think.
Yeah.
And, well, if you'd like to start off by telling us what Starborn Support's about, and I think we'll launch it from there.
Sure. Let me start with how I got into Starborn Support, because that's a really cool story. I was with MUFON for, 6 years or so, and I worked my way up to the chief investigator of the state of Delaware. But, you know, I started getting tired of just the regular UFO cases. I mean, you get out there and you get a report of these anomalous lights, and you interview the person, and they make your report. So, you know, at one of the conferences, the MUFON conference that I went to probably 2 years ago in October, I ran into my buddy Peter Robbins. And, what a guy. And I said to him, you know, listen, I'm really getting tired of this mundane anomalous light stuff. I said, I'd like to go move into the field of abduction. And he said, well, here's two ladies that you can call. And the one lady that caught my eye was Audrey Hewins. And I called her up, and we talked probably for about 5 minutes, and she said, okay, you're the guy. Why don't you start a Pennsylvania chapter? And I said, what? And she said, you sound like the kind of person that we've been looking for. So I said, wow, okay. So I said to myself, geez, I'm wondering how I'm going to do this Pennsylvania chapter. I've got to have a crew of people. And suddenly, I just had these three people popped into my head. The first one I think you know is Chris Augustine.
Yeah.
He's a multiple abductee, and he has a really good knowledge of abduction and ufology. So I said, let me get in contact with him, and I called him up, and I didn't even finish the sentence, and he said yes.
Yeah.
And I said, wow, great. And there were two MUFON investigators that I just really thought the world of. They were so good and just so precise in their case, and reports were beautiful. And I said to these two ladies, Laura Weiser and Julia Weiss, I said, would you like to be? And they just said yes right away, too. So it was this magical thing where we came together.
Yeah.
And we got our first meeting together, and it was magical. Everything just fell into place. And so Audrey tells me later on that, when she was abducted one time, that she was told that this would come together and that she would meet people that would start state chapters, and we'd have one in Pennsylvania, and I would be, you know, involved and wild, you know.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know.
But that's the way it happens, isn't it? It's just sort of like you kind of like find yourself in limbo, and then all of a sudden –
yeah.
All these atoms come together and create
exactly.
Yeah.
And the weird thing about it was, I don't know if you've ever heard of the time codes where, you know, you look at the clock and you see 12:12, 11:11.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. That whole week before, I was seeing 11:11, 12:12, 2:22, 5:55. And I thought, I don't know what's going on here, but it's very strange.
Yeah.
And as soon as I got hooked into Starborn Support, they stopped. So every time something important comes up, I start seeing these time codes, and I'm just waiting to jump in on whatever the crisis or whatever it is.
For the big reveal.
Yeah, exactly. So Starborn Support was founded by Audrey Hewins about 8 years ago. The whole the whole organization is dedicated to the care and support of abductees. They get a raw deal. They get abducted and they don't know what to do. They're completely mystified. They have this really new experience that they can't fit into their worldview. So they pull away. They withdraw from, their families, because, of course, the families don't want to hear it, unless, of course, they're lucky enough to have a sympathetic family member. Their friends think they're nuts, and, these people wind up withdrawing into themselves and into their problems. So we decided that we were going to tackle that problem and become advocates. And it's been pretty good. I mean, the first thing that we thought that we would do is start the radio show. Starborn Support Radio is really, it's our baby. And it has been just wonderful because we've gotten the word out. Our audience is growing. And, it's a lot of fun meeting people and interviewing abductees and getting the information out there. I think that's the most important thing. Whoever we have on, we don't want to focus on, what they're doing or anything like that, because I think most people know what these guys are doing, the well-known guys. Yeah. And so we want to focus on, how did you become who you are? What happened? What did you see? What did you do? Were you abducted? So we want to get that story out, because I think the more abductees hear that and hear that these people went through the same thing they went through, it's going to give them a little bit of courage to step up and be counted, which I think they deserve.
Yeah.
Are you strictly support, or do you do like research and stuff like that too?
Oh yeah, we do. Research is done mainly up in Maine by Debbie Paiva. She's the research director, and she's the one that compiles all the data and everything like that. We do research, and I'm not exactly sure what the projects are she's working on now, but she's always gathering data, and she's very, very good at it.
She's knowledgeable.
She really is, really is. Yeah. And we also have a technical person up there, and I'm blanking right now because I'm, starting to suffer from dementia. Just joking. Can't think of names. Can't think of names sometimes. But it'll come to me like maybe, 1:30 this morning or something. So we've got a pretty full team. And
you've all got qualifications as well, haven't you? You're all established in a field as well. I've noticed that you've got your sort of PTSD experience and you're working with Vietnam vets, etc.
That's right.
And Debbie works with children and women and that woman, what she doesn't know isn't worth knowing, really.
Oh, let me tell you, yeah.
So, this is something that I think's valuable, because since John Mack died and, everybody else has kind of got too old now, and people are dying, all these old heroes that really were singing our song have moved along now, or, they're not as active because of their age and infirmities, etc. So I think it's really important, and it validates things as well for people on the outside. It makes them less afraid, because you know that you want to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about. So I think that it's really valuable that you've got that behind you.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And, the experience counts, especially experience with abduction. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
It's
what is necessary, isn't it? We need somebody with it who's had the experiences and has got the experience,
Exactly. I couldn't tackle it without my crew because, like I said, Chris has all that experience and knowledge behind him. I've got a lot of UFO stuff behind me, and was a psychologist practicing in the inner city and at the VA for, I was 11 years with the VA, and then the rest of the years were spent working inner city and a little bit of time in New Mexico out way, way out in the outer city, not too far from Cannon Air Force Base.
Right. So you've dealt with a lot of people that have struggled with a lot of issues, and PTSD is a massive factor in abductees, contactees.
Yeah. What's impressive is that I see a lot of the same symptoms and behavior in abductees that I saw, you know, in Vietnam vets. And, you know, it's a completely different package. And you know, pardon me, not to, you know, downplay the severity of PTSD in the vets, but I see the same level of severity in, I would say, most of the abductees that we, the new abductees that we're finding, you know, not new in terms of abduction, but new in the sense that, you know, they've come out and talked to us.
Yeah.
And they're untrusting at first. And I think, you know, the fact that we not only tell them that we're supporting you, but you're totally anonymous. And, you know, our ethics are based on the fact that we don't say anything to anybody unless it's approved by you. Yeah. It makes them feel comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. The trust issue is massive. I mean, I spend quite a bit of time getting to know the people that I'm talking to and establishing a relationship and a friendship and trust before we even go near the experiences, because quite often the people that I'm talking to you know, are exhibiting signs of stress and mental distress, you know, and they're starting to malfunction in their lives, and they have like the immediate pressing issues of things like debt spiraling out of control or substance abuse and you know, the pain killing factor of it all, which makes you kind of careless in your life. I mean, I've lived that myself, you know, from all this. As a survivor of it all, I only have a capacity to relate, you know.
Yeah.
But but that in itself, I think, is quite handy, because, you know, maybe somebody, you know, some of the people I'm talking to at the moment might be intimidated by the fact that I was a psychologist, but because I'm coming to them from a, you know, the point of view is, look, I've been you, you know, and I'm still you, but I'm you a little bit in the future,
right?
You know, that helps with the most sort of, I don't want to say vulnerable, because they're not very vulnerable, they're really strong people.
Oh yeah,
but they're in a very unstable place in their lives. You know, they're spinning too fast to sort of hold on to anything to get a grip and try and focus and sort things out. So, I think it's important to, you know, to establish that as well.
Yeah,
it's an event that essentially just rips you out of your everyday reality. You know,
that's right.
It's something that you can't just sit and make sense of. You know, like, you know, you're not in control.
Well, I did a presentation for the Experiencer Speak conference this year about, you know, the way I look at it is that you have this puzzle that you've taken your whole lifetime to create, and, you know, you have pieces of the puzzle. One piece might be, you know, my job, and here's my family over here, and, you know, here's my social life over here, and my parents, and everything fits in really nice. Well, suddenly, somebody out there just takes a piece of a puzzle and throws it in and completely blows your puzzle apart. And here's this piece that you can make no sense of, and your puzzle is completely in disarray. And so, you know, the time that you spend looking at this broken puzzle, trying to put it back together, it seems impossible. And that's one of the things that we're there for, to try to help them piece everything back together, and yet try to take the experiences that they're having and fit them into their worldview. So number one, they'll be comfortable with them, and number two, they'll learn, you know, how special they are and what their meaning is, why they receive this.
Yeah, and that's impossible to see when you feel like you're under attack.
Exactly, and that's one of the things that we try to get across. It may not always be an attack. I mean, you know, the old saying, as above, so below, you know, we have evil and good here on earth. And, you know, if anybody wants to argue that, you know, evil doesn't exist, oh, it does. And it's out there.
It certainly does.
Oh,
yeah.
Darn right.
And we don't have to look to the skies for it either.
I know.
Look at our TV screens.
That's right. That's right. And you know, there's good and evil out there too, and that's been proven by the number of alien species that you know we've apparently been visited by.
Yeah, but I mean, as well as that, there's the element of say, like when I was taking drugs all the time because I just couldn't deal with it. It was taking a lot of everything, you know, uppers, downers, the lot. It was all painkillers. You know, and it was, it made me wonder if I was having these experiences, or if they were really experiences, or if they were, like, you know, a product of what I was doing to myself.
Mm-hmm.
Or if the drugs that I was taking actually made the memory wipes, not as effective, and I was still, you know, I've been able to poke through into the experience and see, you know, what was going on. Then I would doubt it afterwards because obviously of what I was doing. But having had lots of the similar, or, you know, very, in essence, very, the similar experiences since I stopped all that, when I go back to those things now, I think, well, I don't think that was a product of what I was doing. I mean, what I was doing was a side effect, or it was a reaction to what was actually happening to me. So
well,
I think were coming through because of all that. You know, they couldn't block my memory or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but see, that's one of our self-protective mechanisms. You know, we try to convince ourselves that these are dreams or these are, you know, just fantasies that we, you know, had under the influence of alcohol or drugs or nightmares or whatever. And, you know, there's something in your gut that tells you that, you know, no, it's not a dream, it's real. And you try to fight that. You know, that's where a lot of the stress and anxiety comes from. It's like, no, I don't want to admit this. But after a while, you know.
Yeah, and like the first thing you ask yourself is, you know, why me?
Yeah.
You know, you have to get over that.
Yeah, you take it personally.
Get through that. Yeah, you have to get through that first before you can even address the issue. You know, you're all of a sudden trying to figure out why, out of all these, you know, millions of people, you know, they reached out and, you know,
right,
put the whammy on you, and you have to now wade through that.
Exactly.
Why?
And when I tell them that millions of people have been abducted in the United States alone, it kind of makes them feel a little bit less alone. I think it's 4% of the population in the United States.
It also makes it less personal to yourself, isn't it? It's like dilutes it, then it's like, oh, it's not just me.
Right.
You know?
We're all in the same boat feeling that you get.
Yeah. You say thank God for that, but you don't really mean it because you don't want it to happen to anyone else. But at the same time, it's thank God for that. It's because you would think you were just a crazy person if it was just you.
Oh, yeah. And this
well, you would do anyway, don't you? Yeah.
Well, that's the isolation. You know, you pull back and you think it's just you. And, you know, like our drive, our job, and our mission is to, you know, hey, come on out. There's so many more people than you, and you have a special message, or you have a piece of this whole answer that we're looking for. And I truly believe that. I think that, you know, abductees have each one has a little piece of the answer, and you know, one of these days, it's all going to come together, and whether disclosure happens or not, we're going to find out what's going on.
Yeah, well, I've noticed some really unusual specifics as well that keep popping up, and it's really strange because it seems to me almost like certain people are being taken by the same creatures, but they're poles apart. You know, Thomas Reed and, Matthew Reed, his brother, with the black box.
Right.
You know, and my friend Paula, she's had the black box, and somebody else, I can't mention the name, has had a black box. Presented to them a small black box, you know. So that's really kind of out there, you know. It's like, how can that be just randomly sort of conjured by your brain? What archetypal thing is your brain trying to present to you if it's not something that's actually happened? And why does it, when it happens, does it always happen to people in a situation where there's aliens, you know? Why is there never a black box presented to them when it's just something random going on, you know, that's nothing to do with ET?
Right.
You know? So I there's just too many things that make me think. Now, because I question it all the time, I try and dismiss it as well, because it's too, sometimes for me it's even too much, you know, I think it can't be this, it can't be that. I'm like, well, what else can it be, really? So, you know, at the same time, I kind of fill my head with everybody else's stuff, so I am avoiding my own.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? But, you know, the unusual specifics are coming up that are making me see patterns, and, you know, Thomas Reed's been one, and Brett Oldham as well. It's in that you feel like you know people, don't you?
Yeah. And, you know we're going to have Brett on very soon, too. I just bought his book to read in preparation, and boy, I'll tell you, some fascinating stuff. Fascinating stuff.
What did you think to the cover?
I love it. I love it because it looks very, very close. I can't mention names, of course, because, you know, don't want to make anybody mad. But, you know, I do have someone that I'm working with who actually was able to snap a photograph of one of their hybrid children. And, you know, the cover of the book really does capture it. I mean, the picture of this girl was from the side, and absolutely breathtaking when it comes down to beautiful. And just really had this very, very alien but beautifully human quality to her. I mean, she had very big eyes, but all of the other features were very nice and very subtle. So,
my son actually looked, when he, you know, literally had all his hair cut off now, but when I saw that picture, it just looked, apart from the eyes, obviously, like my little boy. I could have dropped it, you know, like, oh, Lordy.
Well,
I'm not saying I've got hybrid children. I wouldn't know, would I?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's just amazing. I think one of the main focuses is this hybridization, following genetic lines. I think, you know, one of the reasons why I think we were abducted early on is to find those genetic lines that they wanted to, you know, use. And I think they found most of them. And, you know, the results are that I really think they're walking among us now. You know, these hybrids, some of them are very hard to tell apart from humans. And, you know, the picture that I saw just convinced me that, you know, hey, I could be walking down any street and one might walk right by me and I wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah. Somebody told me that they were coming out of a store and walking across the car park to the car, and this woman came jogging past him. She had a tracksuit on and she had long blonde hair, sunglasses on, and earphones in. And he thought, oh, she looks a bit like a Nordic. And then when he looked back at her, she was stood there just staring at him. And he was like, oh, did she hear what I was thinking? And totally freaked out. And
somebody else
has seen, had a similar experience at a checkout in the supermarket, you know. I can't remember the details of it, but it was, you know, it was in the same conversation. So, you know, I think, well, why not? You know, I've seen some strange-looking people, very kind of gaunt, waxy faces that I thought, well, they've either been in a fire and had really good surgery, or they're not from around here, you know what I mean?
Well, I, you know, you can get a certain feeling when you are around someone, you know, who you have doubts about, you know, you feel it in your gut, at least I do. And, you know, it's almost like they're giving off a signal, or you're picking up some of their telepathic thoughts, or they're trying to get to you. But I don't know. Maybe they represent the next step in our evolution.
You humans.
Right.
Well, we need it. I'm sorry, but we do. The bloody state of everything.
The
sociopaths running the place, you know.
It makes me really, really sad. I mean, reading the paper here, watching the news, I mean, I dread putting CNN on because every day there's somebody running around with a gun shooting people. And, you know, I don't want to get into any government conspiracy stuff, but, you know, Monarch program, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, you know, I don't believe that they ever stopped any of that kind of stuff. you know. But I don't know. I don't know. I've had some weird experiences that I put foot to ET, you know. And I don't know if it's military. I don't know who they are. I have seen people in suits and I've seen people in uniform, so I have no idea. Unless there's, like, multi-agency involvement in contactees, which I could believe as well. Which is one of the reasons why I like to keep people private, you know, because as soon as you start talking, as soon as I started talking publicly, things took a real dark turn, you know?
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. I think we have to be careful. I think people who suffer through my labs actually have worse post-traumatic stress because from my understanding and experience talking with a few people, they aren't just – there's nothing, absolutely nothing pleasant about them. And, you know, seeing guys in military uniforms standing over you and they're not aliens all of a sudden, they're very creepy.
Yeah. Oh, well, I've seen some horrific things. I mean, the time when I saw a guy in a uniform, I was sat on a plastic cafeteria chair type thing, bolted to a wall in a metal room that had all kind of rivets and, you know, whatever. It had like a door, like a submarine, but there was a light on the other side of it. He turned to me and said, don't worry, it won't take long to adjust. Like he cared, you know what I mean? I'm like, why would anyone say that? You know, it's like... but then with the one with the guy in the suit, which I only remember the seeing his feet and his trouser legs for some reason, I can't see up above his knees.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a woman who had been like cut open and electrocuted and all this sort of stuff. Really, really horrific. Like her throat was cut open and she had cuts all down her body and all her feet were charred from the electric and the her wrists as well. It was horrific. And then last week, somebody posted like a rock band video and it was called something about prostitutes. I can't remember now. But about them being cut up basically, dissected or something.
Ooh, yeah.
And this picture was exactly the scenario that I'd seen in this experience, and I went absolutely, my face went numb because I didn't know what to think, you know. I thought, I've actually seen that. Does that mean that that was really real then? How could I know that? I've never seen anything like this before in my life, you know. And I went into a bit of a tailspin about it and started panicking, and I got upset because, you know, it's something that's been in my head for so long that I thought, was it real, was it not real, who did that? Because I heard a screaming when I was hiding. And when I came out, when the screaming stopped, she was dead, you know. And then I heard somebody coming, and I sort of scuttled back to where I was, but saw somebody walking down this concrete ramp towards me, black shiny shoes and the black trousers. But I know there was nothing blocking my view, but I cannot see above his knees. Oh. There's just no memory. It's just like it's been rubbed out, you know.
Well, who was cutting her up?
I don't know, because I was hiding. I was hiding underneath some stairs, these concrete stairs.
Wow.
There wasn't any stairs to get up. It was like the underneath of them, and I was like crouched underneath that. And I could hear her, and there was kind of like a gap to my left. And I was sort of thinking, I need to do something, but I didn't dare move. I wanted to go and, you know, do something, but I didn't dare move. And then I saw three rats run along a wall at the other end of this thing. So I thought, if they can get out, maybe I can get out. So I crawled after him and crawled out of this place, and there was no one there. And that's when I sort of stood up and turned to my right, and she was on a concrete slab with all these cables around her wrists, and her feet were together, but her arms were apart, you know, and she was just cut up and dead. And I'm like, I would never know the detail of a cut open throat, you know what I mean? But I saw every bloody sinew, vein, everything all wet and messy, you know, and I don't think I could actually just come up with that in my head because I've never seen
correct.
It, you know what I mean?
That's correct.
So,
you know, that's
like, you know, that sort of disturbed me because I thought of the detail was just, and the length of it and the sensation of the grit on my hands on the floor, you know, and things like that. So, but then when I saw that picture, it was just like a punch in the face. you know, and I don't know where the pictures originated from or anything, but I thought, I don't even know if I want to go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah, no, you know, that's a little bit more than a lucid dream, I'd say. You know, it just, you know, and it's just an attest, it's a testament to your strength. I've always said that to myself and to others about you, is that, you know, you've been through so much and you've seen so much, and yet, you know, you're out there helping people, helping other people. It's not only commendable, it's just an amazing achievement for someone who's been through all that.
But it helps me. It helps me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I use you as an example a lot, saying, you know, look at this person's been through this, that, and the other thing, and yet, you know, he or she is out here helping people, and you too can do that. You can get to that point. You know.
Oh, I've come from death's door. I have come from death's door.
Right. And you've told me about that. And, you know, I've always praised that strength in you. It's just an incredible thing. But, you know, listening to all that stuff, you know, and, you know, the TV shows, the new series of TV shows they have, like, you know, what's that one called, Alien Files or something? They're unleashing Alien Files,
yeah,
or whatever they're doing.
Yeah.
You wonder, well, look, if they're having these military things and people are seeing military people during their abductions, then, you know, maybe Eisenhower did meet with them back in 1957 or 58. Maybe we did sign a contract. Maybe, you know, maybe all of the stuff that people are, you know, kind of poo-pooing away or making jokes of on these TV shows, maybe they're all true, because everything that people are going through, especially abductees, when they talk about things, you know, to me it says, hey, don't laugh too much at this stuff, because it seems to me that the proof is in the pudding. And sit down and talk with an abductee, and you'll hear some of the evidence.
Well, my mum said to me recently that about 10 years ago, she had a dream where I was upside down in a tank of yellow bubbling liquid. And then I saw something on a YouTube video, well, I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 weeks ago, where somebody was talking about a military base where they had all these, you know, I don't know if he was talking about clones or whatever, but the thing that really caught my attention was that he said yellow liquid.
Mm.
You know, and I just thought, well, God.
Well, very similar to that. One of the first people that I worked with is a gentleman from the Southwest who we talked on the phone quite frequently about, you know, his issues and his problems with being abducted. And, you know, he was talking about the blue light that puzzles him,
God.
You know,
yeah.
That he can't figure out, he can't put it into this, you know, puzzle that he's trying to put back together. And one day he called me in a panic, saying that, you know, I lost it. I totally lost it. And I said, well, what happened? And he said, well, a friend came over and he was wearing sunglasses that had blue tinted lenses, and the sun kind of glinted off the glasses, and all I saw was that blue light in my face, and I lost it. I ran inside. I closed the door. I didn't talk to anyone, and everybody outside, you know, thought I was nuts. But, well, I told him to, you know, once he calmed down, to go with it, you know, just try to figure out where that blue light came from and why you reacted to it like that. And he called me back saying that he was perfectly calm. All of a sudden, everything was in place, and he remembered a lot of the abductions that he had gone through. And, you know, this little blue light that glinted off someone's eyeglasses opened up the whole thing for him. And it wasn't long before he had it all back together. And, yeah, he's doing pretty well.
Yeah. Well, that blue light, I've had an experience where I was surrounded by this blue, deep, deep blue, you know, and I had very little recollection. I was too frightened to look at the memory anyway, but I'd had bruises. I remembered seeing various things, and that I was on like some kind of dentist chair with my arm outstretched with a little black dog chewing on my hands. But, you know, as the years have rolled on, I've remembered seeing, and I think it's weird when the blue parts and you see what's around it, it's like the blue covers everything that's in front of you, bleeds over all of the objects that are around you.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered that my arm was actually on a steel table with a blue cloth, And still can't get past the black dog, but I know it wasn't a dog. It was too small
right.
and round. And to my left and just in front of this table was like a piece of hospital equipment that was plotting a graph.
Mm.
Now, I could feel like pins and needles on the tips of my fingers on my arm that was outstretched. So I think that this, whatever it was that was needling my fingers, was testing some sort of nerve function or whatever.
Right.
And that this machine was plotting the graph of my nerve function, because I've had similar procedures because I've had problems with that arm and that hand and circulation.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, this similar procedure was offered to me, and I just thought, well, now I know what's caused it.
Right.
You know what I mean? But the next day I had sort of bruises and puncture marks all over my right hand, which I couldn't see at the time. So a little girl who changed from a little girl into sort of like a human gargoyle monster with golden eyes. You know,
yeah.
And that, you know, but it's like, because I was too terrified to look at that memory, I couldn't remember all of these things. But as I relaxed about it and just kept, I don't know when it was, and it's just like, I just remember seeing it, and I thought, I was in shock. Oh my God, how did I forget seeing that?
Right.
You know?
Right.
And then, you know, no, I haven't made it up. I haven't put it there. Why would I? Why would I think of that? Why would I not think of a little monster or something instead, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I've also interviewed very similar situations with other abductees, but the one that really got me, the one that really, I was blown away by, was an abductee who told me about her experience with a gray who was in her bedroom, and there were two other creatures with her, a tall red creature and a short blue one. It's the other way around. Tall blue creature and a small red one. And it seemed like the blue creature was kind of like in charge of the red creature because it kept mumbling orders. That to me, you know, why would somebody make that up? I mean, why would somebody make any of this stuff up? That's my question.
And then go on the internet and make a complete idiot of themselves for the rest of their lives.
Exactly. And why would 94% similarity in all of these reports exist if people were just saying, hey, I want my 15 minutes of ufology fame? It doesn't work for me. I do think that these things are real, and I think that there are probably hundreds of thousands of people suffering. You know, we have quite a job ahead of us.
Yeah, listen, you know, Stephen Hawking says he doesn't believe in abduction because they don't abduct smart people. It's always the wackos and the stuff like that. And I'm just sitting there, I'm like, you know, for people that are so smart, that's like one of the most ignorant things I've ever heard. It's like, what makes you think smart people and important people aren't being abducted? They are.
Oh, God.
They could, you know, they're just not reporting it or whatever. I mean, they're having interactions with everybody, all class of people.
Yes.
You know, whether you're a homeless guy or whether you're, you know, a CEO of a company, it runs the whole gamut. So
yeah.
It's just stuff like that. It just breeds from people not even looking at the subject or looking at the data, which there's plenty of. Now, I have to agree with why he says that, and that's because of the lunatic parade that is the face of ufology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what people see. They see all the lunatics. They don't see all the stuff underneath. You know what I mean? To even consider it.
Oh, absolutely. And
which is a shame.
Yeah, one of the reasons why you don't hear about too many CEOs or presidents of companies being abducted is just for that reason. You know, they're CEOs and presidents, and they want to stay there, and they want to continue getting that salary because, you know, if I report I was abducted, I mean, imagine a chief of staff of the White House comes to Obama and says, hey, listen, I have something to tell you. I don't think he'd be the chief of staff for very long.
No.
You know, they put him on administrative leave and pay him until he was, you know, too old to breathe. But, you know, he would not be in charge anymore.
And you'd watch the stocks and shares of a company go down to nothing.
Mm,
the CEO,
mm-hmm.
said.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, alien abductions, yeah.
Right, so even those people, I mean, those rich guys, well, you know, they suffer too, believe me. And no class is exempt.
Well, I wouldn't, I mean, look at what happened to Robbie Williams when he started talking about his experiences, you know. It absolutely ruined him for a while, didn't it? He had to pretend to just go quiet for ages and... You know, let it all die down so he could do his comeback, but...
Well, yeah, but he said, he didn't just say, I was abducted, or this is a interesting thing. He's like, I'm going to quit music, and I'm going to put everything that I have into this phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and people were just like, you're a complete idiot, man. I mean, you've gone off the, you know, it's just tabloid fodder.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's so unfortunate. It really is, because this field is so rich and so wide open and ready for people to start taking seriously. I don't know. I think it would be amazing for, you know, mainstream science to start looking at this, mainstream psychology. You know, I have stories that veterans have told me when I was at the VA. This one story is just amazing. This guy was separated from his unit, and he was in the jungle, and he was really afraid that he was going to die. When suddenly, you know, he saw this yellow light through the trees, and it was really, really a brilliant yellow light, and this was in the middle of the day. So for some reason, he decided to follow that yellow light, and it led him through the jungle. And then all of a sudden, it dashed off. And when he looked into the, you know, in front of him across a big field, there was his unit. Mm-hmm. Now tell me, you know, why would somebody make that up? And he was crying when he was telling me this story. So it was no game. It was no play. It was real.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard quite a few stories like that.
Yeah, it baffles me. I just don't know why somebody can't sit down and say, wow, we have to take a serious look at this because there's something going on.
Mm. Well, I mean, there are some groups that think that they take a serious look at it, but they take a really dismissive look at it. You know, they won't accept anything. They can't do without the evidence. You know, there's no allowance for sort of safe bet assumptions or anything like that, you know. So, and, you know, I've seen them posting things like, so many more people believe in the paranormal than doing UFOs. And that's like, well, yeah, of course, because, you know, the people who believe in UFOs believe in the paranormal as well. So we're bumping up those numbers for you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And these studies, where are they done?
Yeah, I think the fields overlap tremendously.
Yeah. But there's no common language, is there? And this is the thing that's been the plague of it all forever.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I've read books with the forewords that are 25 years old. You know, Whitley Strieber saying there needs to be a common language, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh my God, that's 25 years ago. And he's saying what I'm saying now, and I've never read that before, but, you know, I know that that's the case. And,
well,
and it's obviously always been the case.
And that, there does need to be a basic form of organization to start with. And I'm gonna make a little plug here. Chase Klutzke and Richard Dolan just came out with a book called Admissible. And I'm sitting reading this book, and I'm absolutely stunned because it just takes all of your data and tells you exactly how to formulate it, where to put it, how to record this, how to run an interview with an abductee, how to run an interview with somebody who has, you know, been subject to a paranormal experience. And it's a great book, and it's probably one of the first legitimate textbooks that I've ever seen on wonderful scientific book on how to formulate cases. And I think that kind of organization has to be applied across the board.
Yeah, because there's no standards. There are no standards, and there's no rules, there's no regulations, there's no regulatory committee.
I mean, everybody's got their own little shtick that they're holding to their heart, and they write a book on it, and they'll stand on it for the rest of their life because that's their little contribution. You know what I mean?
Right.
And they're not going to bend. I mean, there's hundreds and hundreds of books of just people's different perceptions of things. And a lot of times that's what it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but, you know, it's really hard for those types of people to adhere to a bunch of standards.
Yeah, and that I think that's one of the issues too, is that, you know, everybody thinks that they have the right theory, and you know, I cannot criticize them, because, you know, who does have the right theory?
Right.
Is there a right theory? So, you know, that's one thing that we need to do research about. You know, we have to take a look at all of these theories, and that's what happened in psychology. You know, when they were developing the DSM-4, they were taking a look at all of these symptoms, trying to organize them, or the original DSM, trying to organize them, you know, in terms of symptoms and group things together. And here's a class of psychosis, and here's a class of personality disorder. I think we need a committee, you know, from everywhere, from all of the fields, the various fields in ufology, and there are many, to sit down and really, you know, try to put some order to the mess.
Yeah. Well, that means people have to stop being precious.
Yeah, and they
is
also
that possible?
Have, I don't know, and, you know, a lot of times, you know, I don't like to say it, but a lot of times ego gets in the way. Mm-hmm. You know, people want to be right, and if someone comes up to me and says, you know what, I know the answer to all of this, you know, I turn and walk away, because no one does. No one really does.
Yeah.
And a lot of them just
that.
Rehash. Yeah, a lot of people just rehash, you know, Nazis on the moon and, you know, that type of crap. People read that stuff because it's
they do.
Like it's tabloid. You know, they don't want to, you know, shift through databases and read about, you know, like technical stuff. You know what I mean? Like
that would take all
like
the out of
science
it.
Stuff. Yeah, they want to read about.
They want Buck Rogers. You know, and the problem is that we're not dealing with Buck Rogers. You know,
they're already digested for them, don't they?
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, we're dealing with CSI, not Buck Rogers. And that's how we have to treat it. You know.
Yeah.
Well, we have to create our own science. Essentially,
right.
We have to create our own science. Just like
that is a good point. Yeah.
The paranormal, you know, people in the, you know, who hunt ghosts and that sort of thing, or try to communicate with. There's a lot of scientists and a lot of very smart people, you know, that started putting two and two together about a lot of things, and they came up with these devices, and they came up with a lot of. Their own science, you know, stuff that hadn't existed before. And they're able to put these things in motion and into practice. And, you know, they're getting great results. They're not getting anywhere closer to, you know, what's going on over there. You know what I'm saying?
But at least they're putting a classification together, you know.
They're getting real data. You know what I mean? They're getting actual data, and it's something that's repeatable for the most part. That sort of thing. And you know, you don't have a lot of people really doing that, and they're not getting any credit. You know what I mean? They're like way in the background, and they're going around and they're interviewing people, and they're. You know, they're walking the walk, but they're it's not glamorous, and so they're not on the TV shows. And if I turn on Ancient Aliens and I see Sean David Morton on there, or if I see, you know, Steve Greer or a lot of these people, you know, I'm gonna put a gun in my mouth, because these people are, you know, liars. They are, you know, frauds, proven frauds.
Yeah.
And yet they're allowed to come back, and people accept them as if nothing happened.
Right.
You know, and it just happens too much.
Yeah, That's correct. I mean, I love Ancient Aliens as a show, but it does lead some people in the wrong direction, and it does have this little comedic, touch to it. But,
listen, I love David Childress. Okay, but
yeah,
every time he says something, it's like, oh my God, here we go. There's some kind of God, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, the only thing can be, it's got to be aliens, you know, or, you know, they're having a battle up in space and they shot a beam weapon down. You know, I mean, I'm just like, dude, shut up. You know, they jumped the unicorn years ago.
Yeah.
And now they're just
over the rainbow.
Yeah, they're just churning out. You know, they'll maybe, now if you watch an episode, it's like they just put a bunch of stuff in a hat and they just... Mm-hmm. They pick it out, you know, Ancient Aliens and, you know, whole islands. Let's talk about islands, you know, and just pull some shit out of our butts,
well,
you know.
Yeah, I think the episode that really turned me, I mean, I still like the show, but when they started talking about aliens and vampires.
Yeah, the dinosaurs.
Oh, please. But, you know, I think in all, in order for this science of ufology to move forward, you know, unlike other sciences, because let's face it, this is unlike any other science that we have. The researchers, whether they be seasoned doctors or just average guys that want to do this, the researchers have to just assume, they have to take some of this stuff on faith. You know, they have to believe. They have to make themselves believe that, okay, these people are being abducted. Okay, Joe Smith saw this huge UFO. You know, and they have to take it on faith because that's the only way that they're going to find some hard data to record. You know, frequency. Right. You know, get out there and do the footwork. Frequency. Talk to people. Record it. Compare it. You know, and... A lot of mainstream scientists don't want to do that. They don't want to leave their comfortable box of mathematics and physics. They want to stay in that area where they can do an equation and prove everything. Because in this field, you can't, nothing is comparable to an equation. There's no mathematics here. It's all,
experience.
It's exactly speculation. And,
I think,
you know,
we're going to go for a break now.
All right.
Joe's frantically scribbling at my okay, Joe. We hear you. Yeah. See you off the break.
Sounds good. Okay. I'll be right here.
All right.
Hi, welcome back to the second part of Citizen Sane with me, Sasha Christie, Guy Weddle, and Michael Milton from Starbox the Pop. Hello, boys.
Hey.
Oh, hey, real quick, I found that the name of that album with the lady on the slab is Prostitute Disfigurement. That's the name of the band. That's the name of the band, and the album is called Crowned in Entrails. So,
that's it.
So, you know, that sounds like a happy family.
How beautiful.
Orientated.
Probably. Oh, I haven't listened to it. I just got punched in the face by that picture that they put up.
God. Yeah. I'm not a big fan of that growly music.
No. Prostitute Disfigurement. What a terrible name for a band.
Oh, it's terrible. I won't buy that album, believe me.
We're just giving it love.
I'll go on Spotify and check it out.
Yeah, well, I don't think I want to know, to be honest, because I just shot the bejesus out of me, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Honestly, I did go, I went into a proper spin. I've never done that before, not like that. You know, it was just made it all seem so more real and, you know, put it back in my head again.
Don't want to do that, yeah.
You don't want things in your head. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about tonight is... something that's happened between a couple of people, that one that I know that was supposed to be a friend and somebody who I've been, you know, talking to. And we've all been talking to each other, you know, all three of us know each other, but, you know, I got really mad with this person because she'd actually gone to this other person and told them that they probably had an alien implant in the nose or in the spine and that they'd been involved as a hybrid on board ship in her abductions. And she was just being completely, you know, filling her head full of stuff. And, you know, and I said, I'm really angry with you for doing that because you should be putting things in somebody's head who's already struggling.
Yeah,
you know, you're supposed to wait to find out what's in there, not go putting things in there and stirring the pot up, because then if that all gets muddled up in, with what's actually happened, how am I supposed to know the difference?
It's right. It's messing with what's already there. And
yeah.
It's almost like leading questions in hypnosis. You don't want to add any information to an already painful scenario. And yeah, I don't agree with that. I wouldn't like someone doing that either. Believe me.
But since she started saying things like that, I'm nothing without her. She knows more than me. She fixed me. And, you know, I'd be nothing without her. It's like, I've known this person 1 year. I've been fixed how? She told this other person that they were going to be fixed. Oh, just like that. Yeah, right, okay, because it's as easy as that. And that she was going to be the one who did it on board ship with E.T.
Oh, boy.
So she's like saying that she's an alien and to this woman saying that, you know, I'm going to fix you. But you know,
there's no fixing anybody when it comes to this phenomena. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There's dealing with it. You know what I mean? And being able to integrate it into your life, and you know,
it's unfortunate.
Walk down the street.
Yeah, it really is unfortunate because there is a percentage of people out there, I hate to say, that are either suffering from, you know, something significant, such as a paranoid delusional disorder, or, you know, you have this class of people called wannabes who, you know, suddenly find some sort of an attractiveness to being an alien abductee. For example, you know, Sasha, she might have heard your stories and kind of got the wrong indication and said, wow, how exciting. I think I'm going to embellish my story a little bit or, you know, try to make it sound a little bit more exciting because I want to be like you, but Sasha. I want to be like her. You know, and it just doesn't work out. I don't want to say anything about anybody in particular, but, you know, those kinds of behaviors, they really do have to be nipped in the bud because that's the kind of thing that really kind of screws up the works. And I encounter a couple of people like that, and I very gently, you know, talk with them and say that we'd love to help you, but first we need for you to enter some therapy and kind of get things together because you're not making sense, frankly. So
that's,
you know,
crazy talk.
Exactly. And, you know, we'd love to help and we'd love to be there for you, but we just can't under these circumstances. And, you know, it sounds like she really does, you know, I think she looks up to you and she wants to be like you, and there's something going on in there that might be driving her to take all the credit, you know, or look better or whatever. And God bless her.
Yeah, because there was a lot of bad mouthing on her page about me.
Afterwards,
and I just didn't buy into it. I didn't reply to her text messages. I thought, I'm just not giving you my energy anymore after this.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's because the lack of attention.
Right.
That's when it all erupted on Facebook.
Right.
The bad mouthing, the naming, and all this.
Well, you did
mission.
The perfectly.
I was a mission, apparently. I was one of her mission targets. She wanted to break off the relationship for quite a while. But I wouldn't let her because I need her and all this sort of crap. I was like, my God.
You did.
Anyone who knows me knows that I need nobody.
Right. Oh God, yeah. But you did the right thing. You did the right thing. You kind of pulled back, And, you know, you didn't criticize, you didn't say anything, you just pulled back and let it happen. And by doing that, I think, you know, you've more or less preserved your reputation and no one's going to buy into it, first of all, because it does sound crazy, you know.
You know, well, this person that I've been talking to, I've been dealing with a lot of the sort of issues that have arisen because of life experience and stuff like that. So we haven't really gone into much of the experience. We haven't even established properly whether it was an experience or not, you know, because I just think that these things sometimes need time. You can't get into it straight away with some people, but with others, it's probably best not to, because they've got other things that they really should be dealing with first.
Right.
So it's almost like leveling them out a little bit, or feeling like you have, or that you've established a level base of friendship and trust before start going into anything action. But you don't know how that's going to unfold, you know, and the person's not strong enough to deal with the daily life. They're not going to be strong enough to deal with that on top of it. So, you know, it's really touch and go sometimes. So I don't rush things, and I wait for people to tell me. I don't push them. I don't ask them lots of questions.
That's beautiful.
But I do answer lots of questions, but with my musings, and I say why I think this and what other people think, and, you know, why I don't think something's right or why I think something might be. Mm-hmm. But I always say that there's no answers, though. I do not have that to give you.
And you do it under the premise of trust, and I think that's why it works. It's very important. It's a very genteel process, especially when you're dealing with, you know, this subject, because my rule of thumb is to take everyone at face value, no matter what. You know, if somebody thinks they've been abducted, well, then they have been, and I'm going to treat the situation as such until it's proven otherwise. Either, you know, either is admitted or we find out that there's some sort of another problem that needs to be dealt with first. But everyone, regardless, is treated with love and kindness and unconditional acceptance. And I think
that's absolutely it. Because we carry a lot of shame because we react to certain things. You know, I carried a lot of shame in my life because of the drugs and the drink and the...
Yeah.
You know, going out all the time, doing whatever, you know, all the things that I'm not proud of, but I don't really care now. But, you know, at the time, they were all reactions.
Right.
You know, and so I can forgive myself, whereas before I never would have thought that I would be able to. I was so full of self-loathing. So, you know, there's a lot of that going on with people, and they don't think they're going to be believed, or they don't think they're worth it, or... You know, why are you talking to me? They become suspicious. Why are you even listening to me?
Because
you started talking to me.
You can't. You have to be gentle with yourself too, and realize that what you went through was the path that you had to go through to get to where you are now. Mm-hmm. You know, and so who is anyone, you know, to say anything else but believe what you've said and the trials and tribulations that you've been through, because that is what made you who you are today. Very, very sympathetic, very caring, and more or less very rounded individual that really does have a talent for taking care.
Yeah, well, I was going to take care of myself for a long time.
Well, that's the problem. You know, that's the problem. That's the real problem with caregivers. The caregiver is usually the last person they think of. They burn themselves out, and you have to remember, you know, caregivers, they can break down just as much as anybody else. And so you always have to think of yourself. There's a space in there where you have to say, okay, I have to pull back and recharge my batteries, and once I feel better, I'm out there and I'll do it some more.
Yeah.
Because if you look at it this way, if you burn out, then who can you help?
Yeah.
So you have to preserve some time to recharge. And that's the most important thing. And that's what people, a lot of people just ignore that. You know, they say, I'm going to keep going and going and going, and suddenly they fall on their face. And
well, that's what I used to do all the time.
Yeah. And they're no good for anybody, not even themselves. Mm-hmm. And always reserve that space for yourself, Sasha. Always leave that little space where you can close the door, kick back, and just take some deep breaths and think about things and put it all together.
Yeah, well, I know that I used to, if I go back through my Facebook history, it'd be quite amusing.
Well,
all the overload, getting overloaded, getting over, she's getting overloaded, right. here we go, kaboom!
Yeah,
Facebook deactivated.
Yeah.
For 1 hour.
But you know, yeah, and you know, I read your posts, and I love your posts, but I can see, you know, in some of those posts, there's a little bit of burnout that you need to take care of, and I guess basically give yourself a break sometimes, because you'll feel so much better. And you know, I do that all the time. I usually sometimes I'll just turn it off for a week and think about something else or do something else, and when I come back to it, it's a lot more interesting than it was at the end of that last week, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, recharge your batteries always.
Yeah, I do that now. Dave makes me as well, because, you know,
I
just get so super uptight about everything, trying to figure mm-hmm. things out and trying to, you know, getting frustrated because, you know, recently I've had a couple of really, really poorly people talking to me, and I felt ill-equipped to deal with it, and I really didn't have anything to do, but I mean, I went to see them. Stayed with them a few days, you know, got them out and about a bit, and, you know, got some things sorted, and went away, and it was great for a while, and then it all went the same way again, and, you know, it was a case of, I just couldn't do anything, and this person was really, you know, being demanding, and like 7 missed calls in an hour, that sort of thing, and it's a personal friend as well, so it was really tough. But the situation needed clinical support.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where it's really hard sometimes when you're doing this, when you have to say to that person, I can't help you. You
right.
need a proper doctor. You need to go to the hospital.
Yeah.
You need 24-hour support that I cannot find for you, even though I've tried. I cannot give to you. I cannot find any solutions for you. You really are that ill. You either need to get somebody in with you, but we've tried every single available source, nothing, because this person needed to get into a crisis team loop.
Right.
So access all of those support services that they needed. Multiple health issues, multiple mental health issues. Not all of them to do with ET, so there was a massive, massive amount of stuff going on there. And, you know, the immediate issue was the health and, you know, the way the person was living. And so, you know, in the end, I just said, I can't do anything. And everyone around them just said, can't do anything. So that forced the hand into getting 24-hour support.
Mm-hmm.
So now things are rolling on, and they can get ET stuff off the chest with me, or, you know, a few other people that they know. But for the real crisis issues, and it was absolute crisis.
Right, right.
So we have to sometimes just say, well, you know, you're going to have to try and separate this or tell all, because that is your only option for survival.
Right. I mean, there is absolutely nothing wrong in being honest and saying, you know, I can help you. You're way beyond my ability to help, and I want to help you get that help. And in the long run, even if the person gets insulted or if they hate you for a while, in the long run, they're going to look back and say, wow, you know, she really did help me.
Yeah.
And that's the reward.
Fortunately, that's not the situation. I've had a lot of gratitude, and it's nice to see things rolling along now. I was really concerned because one of the parents had a heart attack through the stress. So, you know, and that's a friend of mine. So, there was just so much anxiety around it.
Right.
It absolutely wore me out. And then I really did have to take a break, you know, because I'm pregnant as well. So,
oh, God, yeah, no.
Kind of doubly hard especially when you've got to admit defeat as well. I'm a bit, I can't admit defeat, I will solve this.
Well, I think that, you know, that's something that we have to get used to doing too. Sometimes there's just nothing we can do, and we have to say to ourselves, I've given it the best I can. And in your case, especially since, you know, you're working for two, it's more important, it really is important for you to, you know, be mindful of your mental health and your physical health. And if you feel any pressures on either one of those scopes, it's just not, there's nothing anybody can say to criticize you if you back off and say, I need to take care of myself. And of course, yeah. You know, you can always contact and consult with me. It's always free for you, my dear.
I should pay in chocolate.
That would work.
I think there seems to be a bit of a shift in even mainstream psychology, because I know a couple of people who've talked to their therapists about their experiences and they've not been rejected or locked up. Or, you know, I talked about mine, you know, to a certain degree with my therapist, and, you know, I don't know if she believed me or not. I think she did, because the trends, you can spot lies, can't you?
Right, right.
You know? But,
well, that's part of it. You know, taking people at face value. Even in regular psychology and you know, not talking to people who have been abducted, it's always good to take people at face value and, you know, let them prove it to you and let them spoil it if they have to. You know, the truth always comes out, but always unconditionally accept. And I think that's the rule of thumb.
Yeah, you have to, don't you? Some people play a game with you, though, when you're like that, you know, but you have to take that chance, and I think it's part of the territory. I think I've had to get to realize that this past week or so, that, you know, I'm going to have these game players, I'm going to be wrong about people.
Yeah.
You know, and they might try to poke fun or make a fool of me. But, you know, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because it's not actually changing anything with the people that I'm dealing with.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, but to have to accept that, you know, that you just have to take people, like you say, at face value, you don't know what you're going to get.
Exactly.
So,
and,
you know.
And you're lucky. You're lucky because you found one person that that will talk to another, to talk to someone who has been abducted without criticism. That's what, you know, one of my goals for my Southeastern Pennsylvania branch is to develop a database of professionals that are a little bit open and understanding, so that, you know, if someone says, where can I go for help? You know, I just don't shrug my shoulders and say, I don't know. You know, we want to build a network of physicians and doctors, lawyers, and psychologists who really do have a little sensitivity and are somewhat open-minded, and who are willing to help these poor people that really, you know, they ain't got much in terms of support.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is the thing as well. This is something that I'm thinking, you know, long term. I've got a CBT diploma to do. It's already paid for. I just have to sit at the computer and do it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then I want to do some kind of hypnosis thing. I don't know if I want to do regression, but fear management, relaxation, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But as it stands in the UK, I've got three therapists, and all three of them are experiencers that I can signpost people to. But this is their livelihood.
Right.
They're just open-minded. But, you know, not everybody I know, not many people I know, could afford to actually pay for regular sessions, and you know, because at the end of the day, a lot of people are in financial disarray, and you know, not been managing the money well, are they?
Right.
Sick, and they don't get a lot of money. So I want to kind of you know, be able to help people and not necessarily have to charge money for it. You know, I know sounds ridiculous, but you know, we've all got to eat and everything, but there's got to be somewhere where people can go when they're literally on their ass.
Right.
I know I was. I had no money. I had nothing. I was in debt up to my eyeballs. You know, I just couldn't manage my money. I couldn't have eaten if I'd have gone and paid 30, 40 pounds for an hour's therapy, you know?
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be a point where you can give. But I've got to find a balance with that as well, I think.
Exactly. Because, you know, right, like I said, it all boils down to, you know, taking care of yourself and realizing that, you know, you really are, you're kind-hearted and you're giving away this service out of the kindness of your heart. One of the things that I want to do as part of that plan that I have is to find therapists and psychiatrists that are willing to work on a sliding scale fee. You know, if someone is only making, you know, 20 grand a year, then, you know, let's charge them less than someone who's making 50 grand. I think that's a fair kind of deal. And, you know, if someone can afford that. If not, well, you know, they can sit down with me over the phone or in person and we can talk. I do that a lot. Over the phone support is something I really, that's really the only thing I can do, you know, over the phone.
Yeah, I do the typing as well because I know that some of the people that I talk to don't want to speak to somebody on the phone. They've got phone phobias or they feel too silly saying it, but they don't mind typing it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't want to hear themselves say it, I think, a lot of the time.
And, you know, when you look at it, that's another whole branch of psychiatry and psychology that could be developed. I mean, there's such a uniqueness to abductees. I mean, they have problems that no one else has. And there's another whole branch of psychology for research, for, you know, developing proper treatments, because the treatments we have right now work. You know, you have EFT and CBT and even EMDR, which I did for, you know, years with the veterans. But who's to say that someone can't sit down and figure out a treatment that is more precise and more effective? That's why I'm begging mainstream science to take a look at this phenomenon.
Yeah, it's difficult. I mean, we're given a lot of, you know, medical reasons why these things are happening. Not, you know, it's not ET, it's sleep paralysis, it's grandiose delusional disorder, it's, whatever, hypnosis, self-hypnosis, all right. Hypnagogic, blah, blah, blah. Anything that you can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of them is labeled as a medical condition.
Right, right.
Yet these people still talk to us with derision while they're telling us that they're, we're having these, this is all, it's either psychological or it's physical, and it's electrical activity in the brain, blah, blah, blah. But they talk to us like fools.
Yeah, and believe me, you know, sometimes they're correct with some people, but in the long run, you really, I mean, that face value thing is where it's at. You know, in the long run, there are people that have actually experienced this, and you know.
Well, I mean, when you look at these and all of the things that they give us, it's like, you know, they don't really stand up when under scrutiny. You know, this grandiose delusional disorder that only happens every now and again is a form of schizophrenia that only happens in your sleep and only makes you believe that you've been abducted by aliens.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh, how convenient is that? And how unlikely is it that one person is going to have every single one of those conditions?
Exactly, exactly. Well, that's one of my complaints. One of my main complaints about the psychological field is they do try to take these round pegs and squeeze them into these square holes. You know, try to squeeze everybody into a certain diagnosis. And, you know, it's not simply because they can't think it out. They want to get paid. You know, they want to get their, you know, their Medicare or their Medicaid or, you know, the insurance payment. And they create these categories that people have to fit in. Where are you going to put someone who's been abducted? You know, there needs to be a category. And that's, yeah.
With Chris French, who is like Britain's leading debunker skeptic, and you know, I got on with the chat, but you know, he's just no capacity in his mind to even entertain the idea that anything's ever visited this planet or any of these things are anything more than, you know, a product of psychology.
Mm-hmm.
And you know,
but he probably believes in God.
I don't know if it does actually, but you know, there's a lot of that about.
Yeah. Well, you know, I believe in God, and I think if one sits and says that if you believe in creationism, that this particular planet is the only planet where life is, I think that's kind of a selfish thought. I think you have to look at this huge universe that we don't even know how big it is. We don't even know where it ends or where it begins. There's got to be.
Look lazy because they just made us and then sat there doing naff all.
Precisely.
I mean, my point is that they'll believe and have faith in, you know, the Bible and
right.
and all of that, but then they think it's just something that is just so ridiculous as being visited or whatever, when you can just look up and there's the observable universe right there. You know
right
what
there.
I mean? It's just mind-boggling, and you know, it's just easy for people to laugh at that,
right?
You know,
and it's so limiting. I mean, it's limiting to that particular mindset. It's limiting because, well, you know, why bother looking anywhere else? Because we're the only people here. No, you know, take a look at the universe. You know, point your finger to anywhere in the sky, and I guarantee you, somewhere out there, if you draw a line, you're going to hit a civilization.
No,
I mean, that's just my belief, you know.
I think it's completely arrogant and ridiculous and
yes.
Retardulous that anybody could think that we're it.
Yeah.
Well, listen, if we're being visited and abducted, that means we're not on top of the food chain, and that really bothers people.
It does.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, we're not part of the food chain. You know, humans aren't part of it. There's the rest of the world, and then there's us.
Right, yeah. Right.
And, you know, and we do what we want. All of a sudden, you know, you have this phenomena that starts happening where a human being is no longer in control.
Oops, there goes my power base.
Yeah, you know, and it's and like you said, Michael, it's ego and it's the arrogance of just the human species
right.
as a whole, you know.
Well, they don't realize, people like that don't realize that if you strip them of their guns and their weapons and you put them in the jungle, well, they're definitely not on the top of the food chain.
And, no.
Right, and to realize that, you know, kind of puts it into perspective and you become a little bit more humble, especially when faced with that Bengal tiger.
Or just the ants.
Right, oh,
you
right.
know, or, exactly. or some mosquito, you know.
Yeah.
You know, we're where we are because, listen, something has gone on with the human species in the past. Our evolutionary path completely is whacked out. I mean, all the things that we would need to survive, everything from fingernails to hair to, you know, you name it.
Right.
Secondary eyelids.
It's all gone away. It's all gone away. And
we sanitized our environment, removed all our threats and all our hair fell out.
For us to go out in the cold, we have to put clothing back on. You know,
right.
We have to, you know, we have to wear shoes. We have to do all these different things that the rest of the world or the rest of the species on the world really doesn't have to do that. I mean, the human species is quite an enigma, you know, when compared to everything else, you
right.
know, in my opinion.
Maybe that's why we are like we are as a species, because, you know, we have nothing to protect ourselves, so we create all these weapons and things because we you know, do much damage with a stick and a stone. Oh, well, I don't
yeah,
know.
People say, oh, we can outsmart the animal or whatever. I said, yeah, if you have time and you know it's coming.
Mm-hmm,
if you're walking
right.
down a trail and a bear, you know, comes out, you're done.
Yeah.
There's no defense. You know, you're licking the French fries off your fingers and he smells that. He's going to...
Finger French fries.
Your
right.
face.
But I like what Michio Kaku says. I mean, he says that, you know, they're so far advanced that if they wanted to take us over, if they wanted to invade us, I forget which animals he uses, but it would be like an elephant, right? Yeah. An elephant trying to, you know, an elephant coming down on a fly, you know, and that's a pretty good analogy. And I think, you know, you have to put yourself into perspective. There just might be people that are smarter than you out there.
Mm-hmm. But if they wanted to have invaders and take us over and eat our brains,
what happened? What happened?
They're probably afraid of us. Okay, they're probably afraid of us because we're a bunch of violent monkeys.
Well, that's the thing. I recently,
why they don't land down the White House lawn because we shoot a missile at them.
Yeah, I recently wrote on my blog, on the Starborn Support blog, you know, why haven't they landed on the White House lawn? And, you know, the conclusion was, you know, if they did land on the White House lawn, within 5 minutes, they would have the Secret Service and Huey choppers and everything firing and destroying them. They wouldn't get 2 steps out of the ship before it would be annihilated. And right. I think that's why they pick these remote areas like Arizona or, you know, less populated areas, because it's safer. We don't want to land on the White House lawn. We'd be killed.
We tried once, and you shot at us forever. People died because shells were landing on their heads.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and supposedly, you know, Eisenhower made a deal with the Tall Whites. I think that's the Tall Whites or the Pleiadians, one or the other, that they would share technology with us if we would not continue with our nuclear program. And then, of course, we, you know, exploded the bomb at Alamogordo, and I think that blew that treaty. And the Greys came along, according to legend, and we made a contract with them. You know, we'll give you some technology if you give us some of your people, you know, to experiment on.
Yeah, and something went wrong there as well.
Exactly.
Yeah, because we can't behave.
Right.
We're smarter than everything else. But, you know, I like Charles Hall's testimony about the Tall Whites in Area 51. Yeah. I mean, there was just one thing that he said, you know, because they can take it all with a pinch of salt, and they do for the most part, really. But, you know, there was a lot of things he said, and some of it checks out. And I've met him now, you know, and I believe him. And it was when he said that he was, when he was engaging with them, the way that they established an agreement on how far away they would stand from each other. And it was so hard for him to deal with, and for him to look at what he was looking at, that
yeah.
He said he had to pretend that they were real.
Oh, geez.
To be able to cope with the situation. And I thought, that is a funky Jedi mind trick that he's
yeah.
played on himself there.
As you know, yeah, that's an interesting, it's a real interesting story that he tells about that. But he lost me when he started talking about how he would dress them up and take them gambling in Vegas.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, Charles.
Oh, God. I think I heard that part of it. I didn't finish reading it.
Yeah, but I mean, I think that that will be difficult to make up, to make yourself.
Oh, happy. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because it does sound like a really silly thing to say, but when you sort of really think about it, it's like, that is quite interesting, that you know, that you would, as a, your brain as a survival mode would tell you to pretend that something was real, so that it was fake in the first instance, you know, and that you're making believe.
You know, maybe he did take him gambling. It's just such a ridiculous image that I get in my head. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're out there,
that's
doing
the other
slots
part of
and
it.
Roulette. You know, I just...
Sometimes, that's another part of it, the most ridiculous things that are said. Hey, you know, you can't discount them either. You have to, like I said, face value is the key until it's proven otherwise. Kind of like a variation of innocent until proven guilty, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, a few years ago, I wouldn't have believed any of it. You know, because I was still rejecting what was happening to me. And I was avoiding reading any abduction literature. I didn't talk too often to people about abductions. I didn't want any more memories triggered. I didn't want to remember anymore. I was too scared. Thought if I talked about it too much, that, so I buried myself in everybody else's stuff.
But, right.
You know, it's, as time's gone on and the more people I've talked to and the more things I've heard, and I think, well, why is that any more ridiculous than what I've said?
Sure.
You know? So you do have to do, you just have to sort of just keep your mind absolutely open, don't you?
You have to. You have to. And that's the only way that you can really do anything worthwhile. You, open mind is the secret.
But I trust my senses a lot more now. If I get a feeling about a person, they often, you know, say something and I think alarm bells, flags going up. I bide my time, though, you know, I don't jump on it straight away like I would have done once upon a time.
Right, and that's one of the things that you develop, too. You do develop that, you know, kind of like sixth sense. You can tell when someone's pulling your chain, or you can tell when someone's a little bit, you know, more left of center than they need to be.
But I'm also overly critical and analytical.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I have to realize that sometimes people don't know how to talk about it. You know, and,
it's hard.
Yeah, but then you do know when somebody's being inconsistent. But I find that people say more when they write it out than when they're actually talking. You know, they feel a little bit, you know, safer, I think. Maybe it's harder to hear yourself say some things that sound so silly.
Yeah, it is, because I went through the same thing. I would try to explain something to someone about something that had happened to me. And I didn't believe the words that were coming out of my mouth, even though they physically happened to me, and I know they happened to me. You know what I mean? It just sounded so ridiculous. And the person's looking at me like, dude, shut up. You know? So, yeah, it took me a while to do exactly that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now see, it really took me a while to develop this kind of like unconditional thing too, because I've never been abducted. I've seen plenty of UFOs. My first sighting was when I was 7, but as far as I know, I've never been abducted. And you have to really, I mean, I've listened to so many now that, you know, I've picked up that sensibility too. I can tell when you know, someone's really honest and true, and you can tell when someone's embellishing, and you can tell when someone really doesn't know what they're talking about too. But
even just seeing UFOs causes a massive shift in your perceptions of everything.
Oh, it sure does.
You know, before I remembered all this stuff, and before I had other things happen to me, you know, that my main thing, the sighting in Wales, was just 2 UFOs. I still, after 16 years, cannot gain any more memory from that experience, which makes me think it really was ET, because the wipe job was absolutely spectacular. It's utterly black and dense in my head. And, you know, but that was just a sighting. But it absolutely melted my head. You know,
right.
And it took time to melt as well. It was like a steady process. It wasn't like I'm a crazy person the next day. It was a real slow downward spiral, you know, and it took me a long time to even realize that that was the issue.
Yeah, and me too. I mean, when I had my first sighting at 7, you know, I became really interested in things outer space. I mean, I would sit for hours with my microphone against a little TV speaker recording all of the Gemini and Apollo, you know, flights and moon landings and everything. I must have had, you know, a mile's worth of tape of them walking on the moon and everything. And it kind of stays with you. It really does. I mean, even when you put it aside, when in my adolescence, I found cars and girls and beer and everything else. But then it reawakens, you know, later on.
Yeah.
It pops up again. When I saw Close Encounters of the Third Kind, for the first time, and believe me, the year it came out, I saw it 13 times, and I would bring friends. I would bring friends, constantly bring friends. Look, you got to see this movie. You have to see this movie. And I think I was attracted to it because, you know, that scene toward the end where the mothership comes and all of a sudden out of the sky comes all these little ships floating around, all different shapes and sizes.
that was very similar to what my first sighting was. And so it kind of triggered a real strong interest at that point. And ever since then, I've been reading everything that comes out. And one of my dreams was becoming a MUFON field investigator and everything. But it does stay with you, and it does change your perception. And I think in some cases, if you really sit and think about it with an open mind, it opens you up to just about anything.
Mm. Yeah. I'd say so. When I saw my first UFO when I was 12, suddenly a tiny little speck of light zipping around, you know, a million miles up. It was non-threatening. It was just interesting, a bit quirky, you know, like, and I saw it with my mum. But then, you know, so that just kind of had me interested. And my mum was already interested anyway. She'd been having experiences all her life. You know, this is something that she's only just kind of recently kind of, you know, admitted to herself to. After me banging on for years. And so, you know, that was non-threatening. That was just piqued my interest. Yeah. Then when I went to Wales, and you've got one just like about 100 foot about above your head and another one on the floor 25 feet behind you, if that, you know.
That's a wake up.
Do you know what I mean? That really, because we were all fine and until I went out by myself and stood underneath it and then heard something run behind me and bump into my back and I ran off completely hysterically blind, couldn't see a thing, you know, and that I had that fear thing, because you know, I'd been outside by myself and that had happened to me, but it hadn't happened to anyone else. But everybody else has ended up just as scarred by it as me when they'd all just acted like they'd been watching some fireworks, you know. And
Right.
The memories of the night just stop at a certain point, and we must have all just gone to sleep.
Yeah, that was an incredible sighting. I thought about that a lot when you first told me about it. It was just amazing. And, you know, I've never had anything that intense. And I think that's part of the reason why I took such a great interest in your case, because that was a tremendous sighting. I mean, you know, with the UFOs so close to you and you being outside and everything that happened. Fantastic.
And there being a group of us as well, but the sad thing is that John, who was with us, you know, he died about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago now, taking an overdose, because he never got over it, you know. And so, you know, I think that's really one of the reasons why it angered me, you know. It really angered me when I found that out, because I'd not seen any of them for like 13 years. You know, when I found out that he died, I was so angry because I thought that should never happen. And I was so close myself, you know, and I know that Donny has felt suicidal in her life because of it. And, you know, it's really unfair because when people say, oh, it was the military and things like that, and I go, well, it might have been, but they still did that to us.
Yes.
You know.
Yeah.
And they did it on purpose because they were miles away. It was miles away, and it stopped and came in our direction like it had locked onto us, spotted us. I don't know. You know, it was moving in a complete opposite direction, and it just stopped and came towards us. So from all that distance away, it knew we were there.
Yeah.
Because it came directly to us, you know.
It breaks my heart when someone, you know, doesn't realize that all they have to do is reach out. I mean, you know, I'm sure he thought of maybe contacting you or somebody else that was in the group, but he just couldn't do it, and that's a shame.
Well, we worked for the same charity, and we were on the same newsletter. I was on the front, he was on the back, and I saw him, and I thought, you know, I thought, oh, I could talk to him, and I thought, no, because when it was going on, he was saying it was the Aurora Borealis, and they didn't believe it, and all the rest of it. So I thought there was no point in talking to him. You know, I didn't know what state he was in. I didn't think he'd believed it at the time. And I thought that, you know, with him being an older guy, that he probably just relegated it to something and nothing.
Right.
You know what I mean?
You were going through a lot at the same time, too. I mean.
Yeah. And we never contacted each other.
Yeah. I mean, your perceptions. Yeah, your perceptions were just as, you know, screwy at the time, trying to put two and two together. He was going through the same thing, so yeah, no one can really take responsibility or feel the blame or anything like that, because that was how it played out. And it's terrible when people feel they can't reach out. And that's what we want to do with Starborn Support. We just want everybody to know that they can reach out, no matter where they are, no matter where they are. And that's why I wanted you to join us.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad I'm on board, because having the kind of support behind me that, you know, with the knowledge and experience and everything of you guys, it's just absolutely invaluable. It's brilliant that I can work under ICAR and you and pull it all together, because I'm on my own over here in Britain doing it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I think it's important to care and share, because, you know, we need the data, we need the information, we need to figure this out. So I feel really good about it. And I know that when you send me that pack over, and I'll get going on that, and, you know, give me something to, you know, sort of organize myself, get myself focused, because I just drift a lot, you know what I mean? I don't up big case files or anything like that. Everything I've got about everyone is in my head, you know. I've got an incredible memory, so, you know, I don't feel like I need to write anything down. I remember everyone's experiences. I remember who's seen what. And I go, oh, so I know somebody who's seen that. Let me go talk to them, see if they want to talk to you. You know, and then I go sort of put people together so they can get on with it themselves, you know, because I can't manage everybody. I just can't do it by myself.
I'm sitting here looking at my little Mac here, and I'm looking at the folder for Sasha Christie. I'll mail it out to you first thing in the morning. I have to make sure that it's complete, because I have three computers, and there's a little bit here and a little bit there and a little bit there.
Oh,
and, you know, I'm not exactly the organizational king, believe me.
Oh, so it's not just me.
No.
But I don't need to, because I've got an ADHD brain and it remembers where everything is anyway.
Oh, I wish I had one of them.
Oh, it's honest to God, it's crazy. It's crazy, crazy.
But, you know, just feel like family. You know, give me a call whenever you need. I'm here to answer questions or help or to give support to you or anything you need. So don't feel alone.
No, I don't anymore. I never will again.
That's good.
Do you know, I really know that. And I make other people feel like that as well, which is good, because, you know, that's what they need, because that's how they felt most of their lives, you know.
Right.
And, you know, that's it. You're not alone anymore. And even if it's not just me, there's other people they end up talking to. Say, like, if I pair people up, you know, the circle grows wider. And quite often people only talk to me once or twice.
You know? Sometimes, you know, that's all it takes. You know, as long as when you start, the first thing I like to start out with is that, you know, two things. It's absolutely private, unconditionally private. And we're here for you 24/7. And that kind of gives them a little bit of confidence that they can come out with this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I've recently had some really complicated people with complicated issues. I don't like to say cases, because it's not people, they're not cases.
Right.
But, you know, and the texting is incredible. I'm doing, you know, bedtime, I go to bed, before I go to bed, I send about 5 text messages out, and then I wake up to them as well, you know. It's full on. But, you know, I get such a sense of satisfaction from it. I think anybody who gets onto a level after some support should try and help other people, because it really is therapy for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
and
it is.
And mind expanding and perception changing.
He could be hear the term healthy debt.
Right, and it's not necessarily like, yeah, you don't like paying the bill, but it's not unwanted, because you want that car or that house. Or for example, maybe you've got to modify a room in your house because you're...
what makes sense will stay with you, and you can build up a bigger picture, but you can't do that by yourself, you know, and you can't necessarily do it just one-to-one with somebody else. You know, try to protect people and... because sometimes they get a lot of stuff put into their heads. But I think, well, they need to learn how to be discerning. But sometimes I resent having to go over all ground because somebody's got all messed up because they've been told something that's really frightened them.
Yeah.
You know, but then it is part of it all. And, you know, you have to deal with a lot of frustration. And I think that at the moment, I've almost leveled myself out to the point where I think, oh, yeah, fine, whatever, that's fine, yeah, that's okay. You know, and I think I should be reacting more, but I don't think I know what to do anymore.
Well, I think, you know, it's part of our jobs to kind of, you know, hear it out and then, you know, kind of like straighten it out a little bit. You know, okay,
yeah.
Somebody told you this. This is not quite what it is, you know, and kind of just straighten the path a little bit for them.
Yeah, but it's hard, isn't it, saying,
oh, it is.
Quite what it is. But I don't know what it is. Listen, we've actually run out of time. I can't believe it.
Oh, my.
It,
it went so fast.
2 minutes. So you've got 2 minutes to plug everything.
Well, I'll come back whenever you want.
Yeah, yeah. So we can contact you, Starborn Support. What's the website?
It's www.starbornsupportradio.com, and that's our main site. And if you want to listen to our show, we're on at 8 o'clock on Sunday evenings, and you can get onto that site by typing www.blogtalkradio.com/starbornsupport, and we have the player right there.
Also, you're on Facebook, can't you? Have a Facebook
Absolutely, page. Right. You can always go to the Starborn Support Facebook page and click the link, and you'll go right to the show. So, and all of our archives are available, too.
Right.
All of our
and
past shows.
And I'm somewhere.
You are.
I'm everywhere.
Yeah. I chose you as a rerun, too, this Christmas when we were off.
Oh, did you?
So, yeah.
I'm like an infection.
But a good one. A good one.
Oh, thank you. Some people would disagree. Well, thanks for coming on. It's been brilliant. I can't believe it's gone so quickly, to be honest.
I know. I know. It was fun. Great fun.
Good guest off on our first show back after a little sabbatical and some reruns. Sorry about that, everyone.
Hey.
You know, life happens.
That's correct.
So, right, well, I don't know what he's saying here. We had 2 minutes, 4 minutes ago. We've got 2 minutes now. So, yeah. So you can listen to
Actually,
our.
Actually, we have 1 minute.
Do
it. One.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
We can listen to all our archives at citizensaneradio.com. And we're on YouTube as Citizen Sane as well. And, you know, I don't often plug that, do I?
That sounds good. Yeah, and I'll plug it on mine too.
Right. I think we're out of here. Thanks,
love
everybody.
To all of you guys.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you, Michael.
Okay. And talk to you soon, guys.
You will.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye now.